This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On the first part of our show, Gary Burton told us how intimidated he was as a young musician playing with the demanding and temperamental Stan Getz. On this archive edition of Fresh Air, we have a 1990 interview with the great tenor saxophonist. A year after our interview was recorded, Getz died in June of 1991 at the age of 64. He died of cancer, which he'd had for 4 years. Getz gained popularity in both the worlds of jazz and pop. In the 1950s and 60s, he was a perennial poll winner in the jazz magazines. In 1962 and 64, he landed in the top 40 with his bossa nova hits Desafinado and The Girl from Ipanema, which started the Brazilian music craze in the United States. Getz won 11 Grammys during his career. Jazz critic Francis Davis described Getz as one of the most lyrical soloists in jazz. When I spoke with Getz in 1990, he told me he had very little in the way of formal music lessons.
I took a few saxophone lessons in the beginning, but that's about all. I went on the road when I was 15, and everything I've learned has been in what you might call the traveling academies.
Yeah, right. Who showed you the most when you were young and on the road?
I think the very first band leader, Jack Teagarden. He was an amazing, wonderful musician. And Benny Goodman. And then Woody Herman's band. We had a great band. I was about, 19, 20 years old. And I learned a lot on that band. And ever since then, I've had my own band.
You know, when you were on the road with Teagarden, I think you were 16 years old. And if I have the story straight, you had dropped out of high school, and a truant officer tracked you down on the road with Teagarden's band. And then Teagarden ended up becoming your legal guardian for a while so that you could stay on the road and not go back to high school?
That's right.
How did the truant officer find you?
Oh, I don't know. But I guess... I never thought of that. I don't know how he found me. I went to school in New York. He found me in St. Louis. But he found me, and Teagarden had a promise that he would make sure I got my lessons. And I sure did, but I don't know if it's the kind of lessons that the truant officer meant for me to have.
How did you end up joining Woody Herman's band?
I had left Benny Goodman's band and was out on the coast, and we put together a little three tenor band in the L.A. area, and Woody heard about it. In the band were Zoot Sims and Herbie Stewart and Jimmy Giuffre and myself, and Woody heard about us and hired us en masse to go with the second herd he was forming after he'd disbanded the first.
The saxophone section became known as the Four Brothers.
Correct. Well, it wasn't originally titled The Four Brothers. It was titled The Four Mothers.
Oh, really? Got it.
But we couldn't use it that way at the time, so it became Brothers. But now you could say Four Mothers.
Uh-huh. Well, what was it like for you being in such a great section? You know, I don't know how many bands have such a good horn section.
It was a great band. I mean, it's been one thrill after another in this business with the musicians I've played with and the places I've been. Keeps you young.
It was in the early 1950s, I think, that you went out on your own, started your own band. Was it a big responsibility when you were younger to have bands on your own and have to worry about, you know, paying the musicians in the bands when you were on gigs and stuff like that?
It was. I was totally unprepared and ill-equipped for it. But because I had a chance to play with whom I wanted to in the rhythm section, in rhythm sections, and to play the music I wanted to exactly as the way I wanted to, it was a great thrill. So the lack of money meant nothing. We just made it somehow, and we kept going on and on.
Let me play one of your early recordings with your own group, and this is a 1952 session of Body and Soul. And playing with you is Duke Jordan at the piano, Jimmy Rainey guitar, Bill Crow bass, and Frank Asola drums. This is Body and Soul, recorded in 1952. Thank you. Body and Soul, my guest Stan Getz on tenor saxophone. Do you have good memories of this session?
Yeah, I do. It was my first session for the Verve label. First time I met Norman Granz, and that started a 20-year relationship with the Verve, which was bought by Polygram, and now they still put it out under the Verve name. I have 80 records on that label.
We're featuring a 1990 interview with the late tenor saxophonist Stan Getz. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back to our 1990 interview with Stan Getz. A lot of musicians in the 1950s ended up getting hooked on heroin. And from what I've heard, one of the things I've heard from a lot of musicians is that they saw the musicians they looked up to doing drugs and ended up doing them themselves, and partially in an attempt to emulate their heroes, and also thinking that maybe they'd sound better. And I know you had a drug problem in your teens and in part of your 20s. And I was wondering how you got involved with it.
You know, I think as I look back on it, that musicians use drugs and alcohol for two reasons. One of the reasons is the same reason as why doctors have used morphine. Because when you get tired, morphine is a work drug. As long as you don't take too much of it, it'll keep you going. Alcohol is a temporary stimulant before it's a depressant. I think that was one reason, because we traveled and worked very hard, and it was there. I didn't look to any idols for the reason why I would take drugs so it would make me play better. That's nonsense. The other reason is that there's a state of mind that you need to do anything in the art forms. It's called the alpha state. Delta is pure sleep. That's another state, brainwaves. And there's delta, there's theta, which is meditation. And alpha is the one state of mind that you do to go into creating something. It's sort of like thinking off the top of your head, relaxed concentration. And when you can't get that naturally, if you're too tired or something, you might resort to alcohol, drugs, to chocolate, to food, anything that will give you a chance to get into alpha, to relax and think, but not really think like, say, an accountant would think, but think in the artistic sense of the word. That's the reason I use stuff.
You ended up in prison for a while. How were you busted?
I had needle marks on my arm, which is a law that since has been declared unconstitutional. It was a misdemeanor, first offense, but it seems that the judge's son had gotten into the same trouble, and he was angry, and he gave me 180 days hard time, first offense on a misdemeanor, and 3 years probation. So all for the best, I think. No pain, no gain in this life.
So you were in prison just for having needle marks?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of prison were you in?
The L.A. holding jail, L.A. County Jail. That's the kind of jail where it's not an institution. It's where people who can't make bail rot in the cell.
Is that what you felt you were doing, is rotting in the cell?
Of course I was. That's what we were all doing. And it was an overcrowded jail.
Did you have to kick in jail?
Yeah.
What'd you do when you got out?
What I do, I played and was very happy. I played music 4 days after I got out. After not touching my horn, they took it away in jail. I played a concert at the Shrine Auditorium for 7,000 people.
You were the musician in the 60s most responsible for popularizing Brazilian music in the United States, especially your albums with Wild Gilberto and work with Carlos Jobim. The biggest hit, I think, was Girl from Ipanema. What got you interested in Brazilian music?
The beauty of it.
Had you traveled down there?
Never been to Brazil when I made those records. A lot of people think I'm Brazilian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm from North Brazil, the Bronx. No, it's just beautiful music with very, very suggestive, laid-back rhythms, and the melodies are beautiful and sad and romantic. It's a folk music. All folk music is beautiful. And it goes perfectly with jazz. So, there you are.
Let me play what was probably your biggest bossa nova hit, The Girl from Ipanema, probably the single record that had the biggest effect on Americans in the 60s in terms of Brazilian music. Stan Getz and his version of Girl from Ipanema. Now, when you ended up on the pop charts, were you surprised?
Oh, was I ever. I recorded the music because I thought it was beautiful, and here it turns out to be commercially very viable. And I was amazed.
How do you think your sound has changed over the years?
It's gotten gutsier. It's more direct. It isn't as pretty. It's not as feminine.
What do you mean by feminine?
Oh, sort of light, airy, feminine, effeminate. It has more substance, and it's more direct.
How did you start playing in the upper register a lot?
I think I played lead tenor part with Woody Herman's band.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was up above everybody else, and I sort of got used to it. And I think then when I got a quartet too, we used to play in noisy clubs, people drinking, and I'd have to play in the upper register, it seems, to be heard as a lead voice with over a rhythm section. And then again, maybe I just like it. I don't play nearly as much in the upper register as I used to.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Stan Getz. Most of your life you've been on and off the road, touring, traveling. How do you like life on the road?
Physically and emotionally it can be wearing. But there's one thing that makes it all worthwhile, and that's that you do get up to play music in different towns for different people. So all the inconvenience you put up with is canceled out by that one main thing, the reason why you're there.
Mm-hmm. You have a family. You have married.
Well,
you have
they're
several
all grown
children.
Now.
Yeah, but when you were younger, was it hard to leave the family and go on the road?
Oh, my family life probably suffered from it, I'm sure. What could I do? It seems my life has been music. And the constant search for it is in some ways been the mainspring of my life. What can I do?
Stan Getz recorded in June of 1990. He died of cancer 1 year later. This is Fresh Air.